Hello and welcome to the Marketing Meetup Podcast. My name is James and I'm thrilled to have you here. Today we've got a talk by Helen Edwards from Marketing Week's Mini MBA. Helen is an award-winning columnist. She's a brand strategist who runs her own business. She's an author of a couple of books, one of which is called From Marginal to Mainstream. And she's an adjunct associate professor of marketing at London Business School. So she's really, really experienced. But above all, she's a really lovely person and gives heaps of advice in this interview today. In her talk, she helps us understand how best to get those great marketing ideas signed off. And I think in a world where budgets are tight and it may not always be as easy to get ideas past decision makers, Helen uses her vast experience to guide all of us from an entry-level marketer right through to a CMO on how best to get buy-in on your ideas. It's a really useful talk, and especially the Q&A, there were some great questions from the community at the end. So I think you're going to enjoy it. Before we get started, all of these podcasts and webinars are free to listen to and to enjoy. And so each week we give out a little shout out to one special partner, and we do that on rotation. And this week it's Exclaimer. And Exclaimer is it's one of those things that you might not be thinking about, which is using your email signature as an effective marketing channel. It's not something I've always thought about, but it's a really cool tool that manages all the emails in a central place, but it can also work as an appetizer to any of your marketing activities going on. If you follow us on email or on the website or on YouTube, then have a look out for those links that we have on there to Exclaimer, and go check them out, because they're fantastic people and they have a great product. Also, quick thanks to Braze, Storyblock, Klaviyo, Impression, Cambridge Marketing College, and Redgate. That's enough from me. I really hope you enjoy this talk. It was a great one for me to host, and so I'm going to pass over to Helen.
Thank you, James. So good morning, everybody. It's nice to see so many people on, and actually so many just people chatting in the chat. It's really nice. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to share my screen, I hope. So there we go. I'm hoping, James, can you just give me a quick thumbs up to let me know that everyone can see it? Okay, fantastic. And yeah, I'm here very much in my capacity as somebody who works on the mini MBA in marketing. And that's really the kind of theme of what we're going to be talking about today. It sort of links to what we're trying to do there. The title of it is How to Get Wider Business Buy-in to Your Marketing Efforts So You Can Get Stuff Done. Now, I don't know about you, but I have spent far too much time in my career, actually, working on projects that at best never see the light of day. At worst, never see the light of day, and at best, just never get that sort of business breakthrough potential that the team always thought that they were capable of. And I think the reason for this is probably what's written on that chart, actually, is, frankly, we didn't do the work that we needed to do to get the wider business buy-in. Now, even though I've said that, I don't think, you know, so you might kind of think, well, didn't you realize that? And I think, no, we didn't realize that. And I think some of you might also be thinking, well, I don't need to do that. I don't need the wider business. I'm getting on with my marketing. I'm getting a load of stuff done. What is she going on about? You know, I'm a marketer. I'm very successful. I do lots of marketing. I'm very busy and it all happens. So what on earth is she going on about? I think some of you would be thinking that. And I certainly would have thought that years back. So some of you will be thinking, do I actually need this? Really? I'm not so sure. Well, my answer to that would be, is this what you're doing in marketing? Now, let's just look at this for a minute. What are we seeing here? We're seeing people watching TV, lovely TV ad. We're seeing some gorgeous outdoor, and we're seeing all that wonderful stuff that we can do on mobile and digital right now. Oh, yeah. And we're looking at a Cannes Lion. Lovely. Off to Can We Go and a D&AD, pencils. And I guess what I'm saying here is if most of what you do, all of what you do, your core focus is communications, then you don't need the rest of the organization to buy into your marketing. You actually don't need it. Because in communications, when it comes to marketing, in communications and communications alone, we're in full control. Isn't it lovely? We've got our budget, we decide what to do with it, we brief our agencies, they mostly do what they're told. We then monitor it. It's all within our gift to do the whole thing without any business, without the rest of the business needing to get involved, other than we'd quite like them to like our ads and say, oh, I saw it on TV last night, or I saw it on digital. So if this is marketing, primarily communications, then actually you don't really need the rest of the organization to buy into what you're doing. You can just, as you were, you can just carry on. But my question is this really marketing? If we go to this guy, Peter Drucker, by common consent, the founding father of modern management. So he's a professor, he was actually not with us anymore, professor, academic, practitioner, author of 39 books. If you're going to buy one of them, I'd buy the one with the orange bit in the middle there on the profession of management, because that's like his greatest tip from HBR. Published in 30 languages, the most published writer in Harvard Business Review. So this guy is the real deal and not a marketer. But look what he said marketing is. Marketing is the whole business seen from the point of view of its final result, that is, the customer's point of view. A business is not defined by the company's name, statutes, or articles of incorporation. It's defined by the want the customer satisfies when they buy the product or service. So, marketing is how we go about understanding the customer's point of view and delivering value to that want. It's not just communication. That's what marketing is, so much broader. So if we step back and think, okay, well, if that's what marketing is, what does it imply that we should be doing? Well, at least all of this. Marketing, the functions, the stuff that we should be doing every day is, insight. Now, probably a lot of you do that. Insight, yeah, research, but it's more than that, isn't it? It's understanding people. Understanding people and their lives and how our categories and our brands and our products fit into their lives. And more importantly, understanding how we can make their lives better by creating value through what we do. It's the fundamentals of marketing strategy. The fundamentals of marketing strategy are the classic, segment, target, position, and then the kind of marketing mix, along with kind of evaluation and review. It's your product strategy. What's the right product to meet that want that we've so cleverly identified? It's the innovation strategy. How do we innovate to stay relevant to people as their lives move forward at an ever-increasing pace? It's distribution. It's the choices that we make about where to be and how prominent to be. It's pricing. Do we just take the price that finance would like us to charge, or do we have a strategic decision around the right price to provide value for the audiences that we work for? Are we being innovative enough in our pricing? There's so much that you can do in pricing now on new pricing models, especially direct to consumer, enabled by digital. It's the service ethos that we put behind our service and, yes, our products. What's brilliant, I think, about digital ecosystems these days is most products are also a service if you want them to be. It's getting the whole organization behind you, pointing in the same direction for your marketing efforts. Internal engagement, especially important if your people are delivering your product or your brand. Think about casual dining or retail. It's management of the entire customer journey. Now, I have a particular beef around this one, which is when we think about customer models, often we think about that classic AIDA model, awareness, interest, desire, action. And all the various versions of it, the McKinsey loyalty loop or the various, I don't know, pentagons or whatever that have been created. But all of them, for me, stop, if you think about it, at the sell. Awareness, interest, desire, action, I've sold, thank goodness. And that's because they come from sales. Whereas actually, if we're a marketer, we need to go beyond the cell, don't we? We need to think about usage, storage, disposal, thinking about the next purchase. The customer journey is so much bigger than I think we really think about, and marketing needs to manage that. It's data and analytics. Yeah, there's research, but then we know more about our customers than we'd ever known before. So how do we manage that data, that information? And of course, it's communications. It is communications. Communications is an incredibly powerful lever of marketing, but it's not the only one. It's not the only one. So the bottom line is, if you want to use all the levers of marketing, if you want marketing to sit at the center of the organization and really show what it can be for a business or any organization, you're going to have to do all of this stuff. And to do all of this stuff means that you've got to get the rest of the organization engaged, agreeing with you. Otherwise, what happens is they can be the blockers. So, you know, they can be the blockers to what you are trying to achieve. And I don't really need to point this out, but look, if you want to do real internal engagement, help shape behaviors around your brand, make them more branded behaviors, you're going to have to get the agreement of your HR or people department. If you want to do something bold in innovation, not only are you going to have to get R&D on board, but supply chain are probably going to need to be involved in too. And maybe for some categories, regulatory and legal. So you simply can't do this stuff without the rest of the organization. And I guess across all of this is finance as well. So then the question is, well, okay, great, I'm with you now. I agree. We need the rest of the organization to agree with what we're trying to do in marketing. How do you do that? Well, I'm going to offer up five ideas, 5 points that worked for me in the past. And what I would like you to do is offer up your own either in the chat or in the discussion afterwards, because these aren't the only ones, but these are the ones that have really worked for me. First up is be more inclusive. Now, that's not that being inclusive is something that we think about all the time at the moment, isn't it? We think about it a lot when it comes to our organization. We think about it a lot when it comes to how we're positioning our brand. But how often do we think about it when we're thinking about internal projects or internal initiatives? And that's all about getting the casting right, getting the right people involved at the right time. As the lovely Clint Eastwood said, casting to me is one of the most important things next to writing. If you cast properly, everything takes place easily. If you cast it improperly, you're fighting an uphill battle. And the same applies to marketing initiatives, stuff that we're just trying to do, basically. Get the casting right. So what that means in practice is if you're working on innovation, whether it's short-term, medium-term, or long-term, bring the other people from the organization into the room early. Now, that might be for sure R&D, but also maybe supply chain, you know, because they're the people that are going to have to find how to produce this thing. Legal and regs, if you're in an industry where that really matters, you should probably at least have a conversation with finance before you start, or maybe bring them into the conversation early. It's about knowing who to include and when, but in general, make it more than just you. The marketing team and agencies are often involved. Look to the wider organization. Now, they're not always going to want to be involved. I know this. They're like, why are you inviting me? I've got better things to do than come along to a marketing meeting. But they will if you explain why, or do it more informally. Get their views and then bring that into the wider project group yourself. So my first point is be more inclusive. Think about who's going to be involved in executing this down the line and bring them in early to be part of developing the ideas, developing the initiative, developing the argument for it. So number one, how do we get marketing buy-in? Be more inclusive. Number two is this one. Keep the marketing metrics for marketing. Well, this is an interesting one because I recorded a couple of weeks ago for the mini MBA in management, a podcast with Mark. And this was one of the things we discussed at length, actually, which is because it came up from our finance professor. We love our, what she called proxy metrics in marketing, don't we? So, you know, awareness, perceptions, equity, those little smiley faces on a chart, and the number of stars we've got in our own kind of specific models. And then very often we use our proxy metrics to say what we're going to achieve in our marketing. So, you know, classic marketing speak, we will increase brand awareness and positive perceptions and drive product line promotions, keeping to the 60-40 rule, gobbledygook to most people in business, apart from anyone in marketing. Because the important point to make here is the rest of the organization doesn't know our metrics, isn't interested in our metrics, doesn't understand all this stuff. So what we need to do is convert our proxy marketing metrics to business metrics. So what does that mean for revenue, profit, or both? Because in the end, anything that we do in marketing and our decisions around those metrics are designed to impact the business. And we can really only impact the business in those three ways. We can increase revenue, get more people to buy it. We can increase profit, get more people to buy at a higher price or a more stable price. Or we can do somehow a combination of the two. So if you're saying, you know, what I'm going to do is drive penetration by increasing awareness, popular strategy right now, probably in positive perceptions, what you need to work out is, okay, so what does that mean in practice? What percentage of additional users at what price am I going to attract? And what does that mean for revenue, profit, or both? Now, I know this is hard, and finance directors know it's hard, and you're not going to always get it right, but I think you will be rewarded for trying, and then you learn. The more you try and convert these metrics to business metrics, you'll learn more about what's right, what's wrong, and you can adjust along the way. So I know this one feels really scary, because you're going to have to put a stake in the ground and say, I think it's going to mean this, the revenue, profit, or both, but it is well worth the effort, and your friends in finance will really appreciate you for it, as will the leadership of the organization, who I've seen get really frustrated by marketing, talking about marketing metrics and not converting them into business metrics. So number one, be more inclusive, which helps with number two, actually, because if you've got finance on the inside, they're more likely to help you with this stuff. And number two, keep the marketing metrics for marketing. Know that you've got to convert what you're doing into business metrics and objectives. Number three is this one, get familiar with the business strategy. Now, this is another one where I think some of you might be thinking, well, I know my business strategy. What's she going on about? I know that. And it does depend a little bit on the business that you're in. So, you know, if you're in a multi-brand business, you will definitely know your brand strategy. But do you know the overarching business strategy? Do you know it well? When was the last time you jumped on the earnings call or read your annual report in detail, or read your competitor's annual report? Even better. And even if you work for a smaller business, because we are so consumed with what we're trying to do in marketing, get those digital conversion rates or manage our agencies, I sometimes wonder whether we spend enough time thinking, hang on a minute, my marketing is there to serve the business strategy. Am I sure of what that business strategy really is? Where are we heading for? What have we got a new leader? What do they think? Where are they going with this? And this really struck me when I looked at, there was quite a lot of coverage actually from the most recent earnings call from Unilever with their new CEO, Hein Schumacher. And I then looked at the transcript. So you can often, this is all in the public domain. I looked at the transcript of a narrative for the earnings call, actually, when I saw some of this stuff reported. And it's really striking. He actually said, not every brand should have a social or environmental purpose, and we don't want to force fit that onto brands unnecessarily. Well, hallelujah for that. But Unilever has been at the vanguard, hasn't it, of, or, you know, we're about, as a Unilever master brand, we're all about sustainability, and all of our product brands must link into that. But I think, note, what he's not saying is Unilever as a corporation is moving away from sustainability. What he is saying, though, I think, is that, you know, to have a social or environmental process, and hallelujah, actually, that he's saying social or environmental purpose, because one of the things that really annoys me is the word purpose has become synonymous with sustainability. But the word purpose doesn't mean that. It just means having a role, having a purpose. And that's something that really annoys me. So he says social, he means a higher, really high order role in the world. Now, and that could be social or it could be environmental. Now, look, in the in Dove, you know, they've done fantastically well, haven't they, with the campaign for real beauty, and they still keep that around the brand. Higher order social purpose. Hellman's at one point, and I suspect it will change quite soon, they were trying to sort of uncomfortably fit the two together with sort of make taste, not waste. And they got hammered. So this is why it's important to know your business strategy. They got hammered by, they had an activist investor called Terry Smith from one of their key investors. And I can't, it's called Fundsmith actually. And he was railing every time a Unilever brand sort of, it looked like it was a force fit. And, you know, I'm with him to a degree. I mean, what Hellman's does brilliantly is make sandwiches really good, really tasty, and chips really nice. I mean, I'm a mayonnaise. It's a guilty pleasure. I love mayonnaise. It doesn't necessarily need a bigger role than that. And it can feel inauthentic if you try to bolt something on in that way. But some brands, it's really authentic and really important and really relevant to consumers. So I'm with Hein on this, but I think if I was running a Unilever brand right now, I'd be listening to this quite carefully. And the second part, actually, from the report from the FT, as part of its action plan, the company said it would not carry out any major or transformational acquisitions. So you can put your acquisitions list away, but would instead selectively optimize the portfolio. Now, if I were running a Unilever brand right now, I'd be looking carefully at what selectively optimize means in the world of our new leadership. Thinking about the role my brand plays, what role is it now going to play in the portfolio of brands? What can I do to support this strategy of selectively optimizing the portfolio? So get familiar with the business strategy, especially if you work for a big multi-brand company. Get on those earnings calls, you know, and read your annual report. But actually, even if you work for a medium or smaller size business, I think sometimes what we do in marketing can sort of detach slightly, and we become less aware of those leadership conversations that are going on about where they're going with the business. And in the end, marketing is there to serve the business. That's what we're there for. So if you're, what you're doing in marketing is really enabling the business strategy, you're going to be much more successful at getting the stuff done that you want to get done. So number three is get familiar with the business strategy somehow. Earnings calls can be a little dull, but I would jump on them if you can. Number four, oh, and there he is, my lovely friend, colleague, and inventor of the mini MBA in marketing, branding, and now in management, which is the one that I run. Now, this is about, number four is learn the essentials of every discipline. And well, yes, I would say that, wouldn't I? As I'm sitting here working, you know, in my capacity as the leader of the course on the mini MBA in management, learn the essentials of every discipline. Yeah, I would say that. But again, when Mark and I were doing a podcast, just a general podcast, we just did a kind of marketing podcast together for the course, actually. One of the things so this is Mark, this is what he said. Then you get to the question of everything else. And what he meant about everything else was all the other disciplines of business. Marketing is about 1/10 of an MBA transformation. It was always obvious to me that wider skill set was valuable. Being better at decision-making, organizational culture, leadership, finance, instantly makes a marketer a better marketer. That broadening out is key. Now, this is really important, actually. So whether you get it from the marketer, do take the trouble to try to learn the basics, the essentials of the other disciplines in business. So when Mark was saying it's 1/10 of an MBA transformation, what he means by that is when you go and do an MBA at any business school, the first half of the course is, it is essential to get across what we would call the core courses. And there are usually 10 or 12 of them. And they span everything from things like leadership, economic, microeconomics, macroeconomics, finance, accounting, organizational behavior, supply chain, decision analysis, negotiation. They cover the essentials of every discipline. And believe me, it can feel hard, because if you're not a natural accountant, spending 10 weeks learning accountancy can be really tough. But that's what makes MBAs so powerful. And obviously, when Mark taught on some of the best MBA programs in the world, he then could see for himself, having come through a marketing academic track, as I had done, that that wider skill set is so valuable. Not just to being a marketer, you know, you can apply that wider skill set to marketing. So everything you learn about how organizational culture works or what it means to be a great leader, you can apply within marketing, but it also means that you can apply it as you rise up through the organization and become, hopefully, a leader yourself. How does it make you a better marketer? Well, at the very least, it tells you what questions to ask. You know, you're never going to become a lover of finance, or never going to be able to run a supply chain. But two things happen when you understand the essentials of every discipline. One is you know more about how what you're doing affects those disciplines, which brings us all the way back to point one. So you know when to bring them into the organization. You know what their priorities, objectives, KPIs are, and you know how what you do will affect them and where they could either enable or block you. And secondly, probably more importantly, you know the questions to ask them. And you can speak their language, basically, you know? So you know the questions to ask them about what you're trying to do, again, so that they can either enable you or they could block you, but better to know, right? So, and if you learn the essentials of every discipline and you can use their language to an extent, you don't often get a lot of respect from them. You've made the effort to understand them and their discipline, and they're more likely to make the effort to understand you and your discipline, and that's how you get stuff done. So number four is learn the essentials of every discipline. Number five brings us actually all the way back to, I guess, what we all think, you know, is probably the most important thing we can do in marketing. But I think sometimes we forget it. No, we never forget it. But I think sometimes we don't take it to its most important kind of point, actually. And it's this one. Be the customer expert. And by that, I mean, what I don't mean is be the person who does loads and loads of research and then spouts it back to everybody else. That's not really being the customer expert. So here is, I sort of feel a bit like I'm a walking cliche when I show anything from Steve Jobs. But I also think, you know, this is probably or was the greatest marketer of all time. Not a leader, but the greatest marketer of all time. And we can't escape that fact. You know, Apple, even today, is consistently one of the highest valued brands in the world. So you look at any of those rankings from Interbrand or Brand Finance, and you will see Apple either in the top position or within the top three. I think it's dropped down to the top three, but last year it was number one and had been number one for a couple of years. But it will always be there alongside Amazon, Google, as one of the most valuable brands of all time. But essentially, you know, we know this, don't we? We can buy a phone or a computer from pretty much anyone. So he's created this brand, he's created such depth and meaning, and at the same time, an amazing kind of product and service experience. Brilliant, brilliant marketing. But look at what he said about being the customer expert. So, I mean, I could have chosen millions of quotes from him, you know, get closer than ever to your customers, so close that you tell them what they need well before they realize it themselves. And then that second one, people don't know what they want until you show it to them. That's why I never rely on market research. Our task is to read things that are not on the page. Now, how much of your time do you really spend thinking about that? I mean, I think we're so can be, and I'm not saying everybody is, but I think we can be so task-oriented in marketing. I've got to get this piece of communications done. I've got to find a value proposition for this new innovation, that sometimes we forget that actually our real job is to know people better than almost they know themselves, and to anticipate what they might want, need, or what might be relevant to them, even in a piece of communication. And that means being really imaginative, I think, about how we understand people, and how they respond and think about our category. It means probably commissioning more ethnographic research. It probably means getting more interested in people as people, rather than people as the person who's buying my thing, and I'd like them to pay more for it, or I'd like them to buy a different version of it. And I think if you really are the customer expert to the organization, if we go all the way back to Drucker, where he was saying, really, the organization is all about satisfying a want. If marketing really knows that want and knows where that want is going, if you like, for the future, you're going to be essential to the organization. And what you need to do will get done, because you are, if not us, who are going to be the people in the organization who really understand people, understand how we can add value to their lives through what we do with our products and services, and understand what they might want before they even realize that they want it themselves. That's what being a real customer expert is. And if you are that voice in the room, that voice in the organization, again, you're more likely to get the stuff done that you really need to get done. And I would just challenge whether we spend enough of our time thinking about this level of expertise versus commissioning another quant study to see whether an innovative, you know, tweak is going to hit a basis report or whatever, or, you know, doing some quick checking our communications before we go into production. How much time do we actually spend really thinking about people, how they interact with our category, what they need, what they might want in the future? And that's what will bring us into the room as the consumer, the real consumer expert, actually. So fully embrace that, fully embrace being the customer expert. So this started as a brief overview of 5 points, five principles, things that you could do to engage the rest of the organization so that you can get stuff done. I'm just going to summarize now. And then I'm really interested to hear maybe what's been put in the chat. I haven't looked at myself, but really interested to hear what's been put in the chat about what you've done that works, what you've done that doesn't work, and if there are any questions. But I'll just do a summary right now. So how do you get organizational buy-in? This was all about, in order to get anything done in marketing, you're going to have to get the rest of the organization to buy into what you need to do. Why do you need the rest of the organization to buy into what you need to do? Because real marketing, or if you're pulling all the levers of marketing, then you are going to impact those other disciplines. And they can either enable you or they can block you. So if you get them on board, you get them to buy in, they're more likely to enable you. How do you do that? Number one, be more inclusive. Get them into the conversation early. Doesn't matter how you do it. Invite them into the sprint team, if that's what you're doing, or into the workshop, or just have an informal chat with them about what you're doing and what their opinion is. But get them into the conversation early. Don't get to your brilliant new initiative or plan and try and sell it to them, because you'll meet resistance. I know you will. So get them into the conversation early when it's all a bit messy still, and accept that they may have some points that are awkward for you, but embrace them early and deal with them early, because you're more likely to get the stuff done. Secondly, keep the marketing metrics for marketing. We love our metrics, 60-40 awareness, perception, smiley faces on charts, gold stars, all the rest of it. We love those, but keep those for marketing. You need to translate those metrics into real business effects. And usually that will mean revenue, profit, or some combination of the two. And you need to think about how you're going to do that, and what that means for those numbers, because then you'll get the finance director listening to you. And when the finance director is listening to you, the leadership will listen to you too. The third point is get familiar with the overall business strategy. Now, I think we're all familiar with our own brand strategy or communication strategy or product strategy, but I would challenge you to say, do you really know where your overall business is going, what the leadership ambition is? Because marketing serves that overarching ambition or should even input into it. So get familiar with what the leadership is thinking. Jump on those quarterly earnings calls, read your annual report, and more importantly, read your competitors' annual reports too. Number four, learn the essentials of every discipline. Yes, I know, I would say that, wouldn't I? I run a course about this, but I believe it. I wouldn't say it if I didn't believe it. And it is the essentials. You don't need to become an accountant. You don't need to become a supply chain expert, but you do need to know the essentials. Why? Because you can have a sensible conversation with people in those disciplines. They will respect you for using their language. And again, it comes back to buy-in. The more you know, the more you know about where they can be a blocker or an enabler, and they could help you. And finally, do the thing that we're known for in marketing, but really do it. Be that customer expert, not just the customers they relate to our brand and what they think about our brand versus the competition, but step back and look at the category and people within the category and people who are not in the category and how we can add value to people's lives in that broader sense. To know what they might want before they even know it themselves. That's what it means to be a true customer expert. So those are my five thoughts. I'm very interested to hear what other people's thoughts are. So James, I'm going to stop sharing now and let's have a chat.
Brilliant. Thank you, Helen. That was absolutely wonderful. I was sitting there thinking back to my kind of like mid-20s where I was head of sales and marketing in a fairly small business. And I remember I used to go into meetings where all the directors would be in there and I'd be like, here's my idea. And then disappear afterwards. And you could almost see like the finance director just rolling his eyes as I kind of came in. And it was only through building those relationships with those stakeholders and gradually understanding what they wanted to do and what their vision was for the business that I could kind of go away and come back in and be like, oh, you know that thing you said? Well, actually, I've built that into my plan. And it comes, I think there's a lot of our community are marketing manager or marketing exec level. They're like new to marketing. It's difficult. It's difficult when you're young and inexperienced to kind of hold your own. But I think by asking those questions and being involved in those decisions, like it's transformative for campaigns. And so it was, Helen, that's clearly coming from experience, somebody who has been down that road. So thank you very much for that.
Definitely. And I think what I would say is, even if you're new, if you're like a couple of years in, there are going to be other people in those other disciplines who are also a couple of years in. You know, so make friends with the early years accountants or supply chain. Ask the stupid questions to them. Never stop asking stupid questions, actually. I still do it today. And never be afraid to ask those stupid questions, but make friends with people who are on that journey with you, but in the other disciplines, actually.
Yeah, that's a great tip. So before we go into the Q&A, before we jumped onto the webinar, we were talking about the mini MBA. I've got just a couple of questions, and I'm sure I could see some people asking about what the course is all about in the chat. Could you give us an idea of some of the modules that you'll cover? I mean, obviously you're dipping into parts of it in your presentation, but what sort of things are going to be covered in the management mini MBA?
Yeah, so the management mini MBA sort of, it's the mini MBA version of a classic kind of MBA. So basically what the mini MBA in management is covering all of those some of those core courses. So there's a module on leadership, decision analysis, finance, accounting, negotiation, organizational behavior, supply chain, conscious capitalism we put in, which is so interesting, actually. And so you get 10 modules across all of what Mark and the rest of the team think are the core things you as a marketer would need to know to be a better marketer. But it's the mini version of that, right? So if you were to do a full MBA, you would get 10 modules of just organizational behavior. We've chosen the best professors in the world to deliver a condensed single module of that. So you get the essentials that you need as a marketer. And the other brilliant thing, so you get all of those courses, and then you get, and anyone who's doing it right now, I know it's a big challenge. We've got a simulation, so then you apply them all in the most fantastic simulation where you're basically running a business, making all of the business decisions for 6 years. It's really challenging. I'm not gonna lie. It's a really challenging simulation, but oh my goodness, is it brilliant? Because it's the only chance you'll actually get to do that stuff.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Well, that sounds great. And what I'll do in the follow-up email is I'm going to send you all the links so you can sort of see more details on the course. We've got about 15 minutes, so I'm going to jump into some of the questions. And the most upvoted one so far is Richard's question, which is, what's your magic trick? It's just moved. What's your magic trick for making organizations more customer-centric? It always seems to me that some companies have an inbuilt resistance to it.
Yeah, well, I don't have a magic trick. I'm not going to lie. I'm not that clever. I think, you know, Mark and I also talked about this on the podcast. Actually, we had a slightly different point of view. Whereas Mark was a bit more kind of, look, some organisations are never going to be customer centric, and if you want to be in a marketer who's not, essentially, when an organisation isn't customer centric or customer oriented, what marketing tends to be is the sales support function. They're basically producing stuff for sales to go out and do their job. And that's just the sad reality of that. Now, Mark's view was, if you want to, and some people are happy doing that, and that's respect, you know, that's fine. But if you don't want to be a marketer that's kind of in that role, then get out. My answer was a bit more kind of, I think, why not try and sort of gradually educate the power of marketing within that organization? And I think where I've seen that done well, and it was in a B2B organization a few years ago, what the marketing lead did was not stop providing the sales support, not fight it, go, yeah, we're going to do that. I'd like to experiment with a couple of things. And she experimented with a classic kind of core brand, you know, sort of umbrella effect, communications and brand portfolio approach. It wasn't just communications, it was more than that. And she said, let me experiment with that, see what results we get, and then move on. And that's how she got permission to just gradually shift the organization from that, you know, this is about sales, you know, and marketing is about providing sales the material it needs, to actually marketing can enable sales by providing that air cover. So that when you go in as sales, you're walking into a climate of acceptance instead of trying to sell features and benefits. Yeah. But she did it slowly and she did it experimentally. And that's where I've seen it done the best, basically.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Yeah, as somebody that also came from sales, it's definitely a move over, isn't it? And I think a lot of people struggle with that. It's almost seen as two separate, very separate sort of silos, and actually they're best when they're sort of working alongside each other.
Definitely.
I noticed a question come in from Jack, and like immediately it's whipped up to the top, because I think it's quite a good question for a lot of people in our communities. He says, as a marketer who runs brand socials, how can I get colleagues on board with humanizing the brand on social media?
Gosh, we're right in a kind of like, I do social media. How can I get colleagues on board? I mean, I think this is a highly specific area of our discipline. And for me, I think people need to understand how social media works and what works and what doesn't. And I suppose I can't, in any area where you're trying to convince colleagues of a highly specific thing that you're trying to do, I think analogs and proxies work really well. So if you can say, look, I know it's not exactly us, but here's a parallel case, and look what they did and look what they achieved, can be very powerful, actually, because then they go, oh, I'll have a bit of that then. So what do we need to do that? So I think analogs and examples where you can show results work really, really well. And in fact, that's probably my best shot at bringing, because I think if colleagues don't believe you, you can't just say, believe me. It's a bit like me saying I'm nice. People say, well, prove that you're nice. You can't just say, believe me, I know it works. So I think you need examples with real results. Yeah. The other place to look, actually, where people might not often look, is usually there's some academic research that's been done in a particular area that would prove you out. So it's well worth, you know, jump on Google Scholar. Okay, if you've never discovered Google Scholar, discover Google Scholar. Jump on Google Scholar, put a search in for what you're looking for, proof of, you know, humanizing in social media, you might not find anything, but all the academic papers will come up. Then what you need to do is filter them, edit them. So as those academic papers come up, look at the most referenced and look at the journals they're in. So the top academic journals are the Journal of Marketing, the Journal of Consumer Research, the JCR, yeah, and the Journal of Marketing Research. Those are your top, top journals, which means that they will have been peer reviewed properly. So you're looking at proper research. See if there's anything from those journals. So that's something we don't often do, but sometimes it can be really helpful actually to go, well, the academics have looked at this and this is what their study showed.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. So part of my job as well is I've got a video agency called Human, and a lot of it is about trying to humanize people on social media. So Jack, if you wanted to drop me a message, I've got a bunch of case studies and stuff that I can send to you. But actually, when I first started the company, I remember convincing a house builder that everybody all looked the same, and you know, they just wanted polished stuff. And I went and took a video camera around a building site and interviewed some of the people that were getting these houses built. And there were some amazing characters, like these Glaswegian brickies who just came up with these wonderful stories and popped a couple of them onto their social channel, and they performed way better. And that was almost the permission I then needed to go and pitch properly to the client. And so, yeah, I personally am a big fan of that. So thank you for that question, Jack.
But actually, just to add to that, James, that's brilliant. Everyone go to James and get his case studies. The other thing that James mentioned, which I didn't, is experiment. Do a really low-key experiment that you can probably do yourself and say, look, well, I've done this and look at the effect it had. So, you know, that's the other thing. Sorry, I'll shut up.
Yeah, no, definitely. And like, even if that's just picking up a phone and going and filming something and then putting it on social and going, there we go. It's twice as good as your corporate message kind of thing. We've got a bunch of questions from anonymous attendees. One that's been upvoted says, crazy situation here. What do you align with strategically if the business has no stated business objectives beyond revenue metrics? And I think that's probably quite a relevant question to a lot of people where they're in SMEs that are doing well, but maybe haven't got to that point where they're sort of communicating a strategic vision for a company. They're just doing good and expecting the colouring in department to make it better sort of thing. So how do you do that when you're not being given that sort of vision from the top?
I think I would be surprised if a leader didn't have some sense of how they thought they could best achieve those growth and revenue metrics. I think I would be surprised. And it may be because they're under pressure, and I've seen this myself, because they're under pressure, the only thing they're talking about are the revenue numbers. We've got to hit these numbers. But I would be really surprised if they didn't have some sense of, you know, when I started this business or when I thought about how we were going to first hit the numbers, this was what I thought, is to try to unravel that. So what does that mean in practice? That means don't put that person on the spot because they're probably under pressure. It's horrible being a leader of a business where you're trying to make those numbers and make them fast. Don't put that person on the spot because it's horrible. But is there a way that you could more informally look back at where they started and what they thought they were going to do, go backwards and then repeat that back to them and say, isn't it amazing how we start? You know, is there a way you can do that? So rather than just challenge them directly, which never works when people are under pressure, I think is to try to discern it yourself. The other thing is to define it yourself, is to say, look, we've got to make these revenue, these numbers, these growth numbers. And bringing in, I understand our customers. I really understand our customers. And I think the way we're going to do that is by really focusing here. What does anyone else think about that? So it's not to fight the revenue numbers, but to translate them into a sort of strategy yourself. You know, it's kind of, what's the problem we're trying to solve in hitting those numbers? What's the overarching guiding policy that will allow us to hit those numbers in a way that you know, is competitive, and what does that imply for action? So take the basics of a strategy, those three questions, and define them yourself.
Yeah, I love that. And I think you're right. People can get really busy in the day-to-day and have that pressure on their shoulders of revenue. But actually, if you can understand the backstory and play it back to them, then and in your language, then it's, that's a great answer. Thank you for that. Another anonymous person has put, as the sole marketer of an SME, so which we were talking about, which elements would you prioritize as key ways to utilize your time best and develop a strong marketing strategy?
Well, I think it's hard to execute marketing without a marketing strategy. So I think, and as the sole marketer, I wouldn't spend months on it. What you've got to be able to do, I think, is I think often when, particularly in education, we can present marketing as though the train stops and you do your diagnosis and your strategy, and then, but of course the train never stops. You've got to continue to do your marketing. So I think as the sole marketer in an SME, I would make sure that I'm getting on with the day job as best I can, and at the same time developing a really solid strategy, which means, you know, do your diagnosis, work out what your marketing strategy is going to be and how that then impacts the execution of marketing, which is the levers of marketing, the classic levers of marketing, you know, communications, pricing, distribution, service ethos. So I suppose my advice would be, I know it's not easy being the only person, it would be easier. It's not easier. It's just necessary to get on with what you're doing on digital, on social, on, you know, managing distributors, working with the sales teams. Can you carve out a bit of time to develop that foundational strategy, get it agreed, and then begin to influence that execution? So you're then getting a solid strategy in place.
Yeah, I think,
I hope that helps.
Yeah, I think most marketers, well, certainly I know I've been in a place where I've gone ahead with a bunch of tactics and got really excited and really busy, and some stuff's worked and some hasn't, without having that strategy in place. But actually, it saves you so much time and so much stress when you actually know where you're supposed to be going, and, you know, makes life a lot easier.
I think the other thing I would say about tactics, I think it's easier when you're in my position to go, oh, you should never do tactics, you know, just get a strategy. But actually, I think sometimes a couple of quick wins, which might be tactical, can give you the time and the space you need to get that strategy done. So I'm not against it. If you can see a couple of quick wins that are more tactical, get them done, get them underway, and then you can develop your kind of more strategic approach to what you're doing.
Yeah, that's really good practical advice. So the next question we've got is, as a marketer, how can you get airtime? So you talked about sort of making friends with those junior, you know, accountants, or whatever. This person said, how can I get airtime with non-marketing leaders that have a different view of marketing? Any sort of tips on that? Maybe it's just biscuits.
I think chocolate will get you a long way. Actually, I think informal relationships and informal networks are so important. I did a sort of panel discussion for Marketing Week with Marg Joblin at NatWest, and that was the point that she made. She said, make the effort to make friends with people rather than I'm going to formally, you know, present my case to you. So I think, and I know it's not always easy, but I think making friends with people, informal networks, bribing them with chocolate and coffee. Can we have a quick coffee and a quick chat? I'm famous for that. No, well, who's gonna sort of turn you down for a quick coffee, you know? And don't use that. Now I want to convince you about what I'm doing, but just have I want to understand more about what you're doing, what your priorities are. Have you got time for a quick coffee?
Yeah.
Who's going to say no to that?
It's quite flattering as well when somebody else is showing interest in what you do. And you can learn a lot from just sort of sitting down and having a chinwag. No, that's great. Lucy's put a question which is apologized is long, saying, when bringing in teams early to new ideas, how do you suggest getting over the hump of why don't you do a bit more work and then get present it back? It's hard to get people interested and excited when things aren't polished, and often they make decisions based on the first impressions of the idea. And like, I've certainly experienced that where you've delivered half a concept or a draft and people go, ah, it's a load of rubbish. It's, you know, but having the time to, I guess, to sort of have something fully worked up isn't always possible. Is there a way around that or a hack?
I think for me, it's about don't even attempt to present it as a concept for which you want their opinion. I think it's the other way around. I think it's bring them in the concept development so that it feels like part of their idea anyway.
Interesting.
And I know that that can feel uncomfortable and messy, because when that happens, operations, we really need you to be part of the conceptual development, because that way we're not going to run into a problem. Okay, they might go, I don't have time for this. But But I think if you present it, it's going to save us all time down the line. And it's only, we only want an hour of your time to help generate, to get your thoughts on this. I think that's the way to do it, is to get people in at concept development stage so that they've been part of generating whatever the initiative or the idea is, instead of even as an early idea going, hey, I've got this early thought, what do you think? Where inevitably people will go, well, I don't know, it's not developed enough, or it looks a bit crap to me because you haven't thought of this, this and this. So I think it's about, so that casting point was about when to bring people in as much as who to bring in, actually.
Yeah, that's really smart. How do you kind of like linking into that? Like if you're in a company that's got lots of different departments and you've vigilantly gone out and asked all these people for their opinions, how do you end up avoiding the sort of marketing by committee where you end up with something very vanilla because you've had, you know, accounts, you've had HR, you've had the directors, you've had sales, everybody chipping in, and you've just come up with something a bit bland and boring and safe? Like, how do you avoid that?
Well, I think the point is that when you ask people for their views, it doesn't mean to say that you always have to take them on board. So, you know, in the end, if it's a marketing, if it's a, let's say, for example, I want to keep away from communications, but say it's about, listen, we're not, our the way we distribute our physical availability, if you like, isn't as good as it should be. We're going to make it better. And in order to do that, you're probably going to have to work with the sales teams. You're probably going to have to work with supply chain in particular. Can they get whatever it is out to where you're thinking? You might have to work with finance if you're thinking of like a direct consumer initiative. Is to bring people in and talk and get their views and opinions about what would be good, what would be bad, what wouldn't work. But what you don't have to do is embrace everyone's views. Then you, as the, okay, I'm the customer expert, so I know what's going to work for the customer. There are some things that you shouldn't embrace. But what's really, and that's a difficult conversation to have, but it's better to say, look, I've heard what you've said and I do understand it, but the reason it won't be part of this is because of this, is a grown-up conversation that you then have to have.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Helen, like, I just love the experience that you've brought to the community today. I know everyone is going to be like really enjoying all the feedback. It would also mean the world if afterwards you either share, you know, the marketing meetup with some of your friends and colleagues so we can get more people involved, and you know, make sure that you give our sponsors a little thank. That would be great. Yeah, I think we're at time, but Helen, thank you so much. It's so great to have somebody with such wonderful experience to come and help us all, and thank you everybody in the chat for being so kind and positive, and I hope everybody has a wonderful day, and if there's anything we can do, then get in touch, and just wish you all the rest of a good week.